Welcome to the Analytics Dynasty Patreon podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. NFC Snap Reactions, Week 13. Here we go. Looking forward to the playoffs here. Excited about this. I don't feel good about Arizona in terms of the running game. I guess would be the easiest way to say it. It's become a bit of a quagmire. It kind of looked like it was going to be Chase Edmonds when he came back. I mean, it's flopped since he's been back. Drake 52 to Edmonds 49. That's week 10. Week 11, Drake 49, Edmonds 54. Week 12, Drake 55, Edmonds 45. And if you're seeing a trend here, it's they flip-flop. Drake 45, Edmonds 58. I would say, like, as a general rule, Drake is getting more touches per snap. So I think that's really when you sort of break that down. Drake, 17 touches, 15 touches, 25 touches, 12 touches. And when you sort of look at the numbers, so you get a 100-yard game in there, only one reception when he comes back in week 10. That's against the Bills. But a touchdown, two touchdowns, a touchdown. I'll say this, like, it might actually be hidden. Some of the stats might actually be hidden in by the touchdown numbers. So if you're saying, man, like, he's on kind of a heater here, since he's been back, he would have been in the top seven, right? I mean, you're like, wow, okay, that's pretty good since week 10. Like, all right, that's pretty good. But when you sort of peel it away a little bit, it's a lot of touchdowns, and it's a touchdown per game. And so, you know, that's basically the guys that have done that are in the top nine. The guys that aren't are from 10 and beyond. And so that's really I would just throw a little caution on that here going forward as being a, hey, he's a top eight play. Just because the usage doesn't really look like that. And it's probably more touchdowns really than anything. So that would sort of be my overall takeaway there with the backfield. I think you can probably feel okay about starting Chase Edmonds. I mean, maybe if you're in kind of a passing game thing, if it's an expected high level passing game, you might feel a little bit more comfortable because he's running, getting more of the targets, running more of the routes, that sort of stuff. But I don't think that this is the week on the road against the Giants. 3-point favorite, you're not really feeling great about that. So probably moving away from him would be the overall thought. At the receiver position, Fitz is on the COVID list, so that's problematic. But I think he's supposed to be back this week, so it looks good that he's scheduled to return. So we like to see that. Happy about that, obviously. He's an all-timer too. It's you don't want to see him end sort of on a on a dud with the season ending like that. So, I think he's actually returned from the COVID list. But some of the notes here about him aren't great. There's a report out from NFL.com. Kevin Patra, I hope I pronounced that gentleman's name right. The quotes from Fitzgerald were pretty eye-opening, honestly. He says, quote, "I didn't really look at it like that." Speaking about his future in football, he says, quote, "It was more the immediate future, like staying alive and things of that nature. Football and how long I'll play football didn't really cross my mind." He said he lost 9 pounds and still hasn't regained a sense of smell or taste. There were a couple days that didn't feel great. It caused him to really reevaluate things, update his will. I got my estate planning all done again. I revised my will. I did a lot of stuff. When you're sitting at home and you're watching how many people are dying every day, you kind of reevaluate things. It makes you appreciate the health you have. So gives us some perspective on what's going on here with some of these players. And we haven't heard a ton of this. Like a ton of the stories about the effects of it of players, right? This has been a story that's gone on for 9 months now. But with players specifically, and AJ Dillon is another one that has spoken up about this. We haven't really seen like the long, thank God, no deaths, but we haven't really seen like the long haulers or whatever, like any of those impacts. So I do think, right, if you have these guys coming back, even though we're not seeing stories about him, Fitzgerald's a big, that's a Hall of Fame, first ballot Hall of Fame name. So that gets a little bit more coverage, even though he's in the waning years. But he has a certain cachet in the media where he sort of gets this coverage. And I think people are going to, it's going to be more at the forefront than maybe a guy like A.J. Dillon, who, you know, outside of Green Bay and, you know, knuckleheads who like dynasty fantasy football, not a lot of people know who A.J. Dillon is. Larry Fitzgerald's more of a household name. So you see this a little bit more with these higher profile players. So I would just note that even, you know, even though some of these guys were just anticipating they'd come back, you know, maybe it's a game, you know, it's late in the season, but, you know, how great are you going to feel about running out a player week 15, week 16, who's just off of COVID or something like that? So we honestly, as I sit here recording and the lead up to week 14, that honestly might not even be a consideration, because if you hit the COVID list now and actually have it, you're probably done for the season. So it's honestly late in the game to actually get this analysis. So, it's just the perverse part of where we're at in the season. So, but yeah, I thought that was interesting with Fitzgerald. So, glad that he's back, and, you know, he's an all-timer. So it's, you know, we'll see. But I think in terms of some of the other stuff, right, we might feel better about Kirk. We might feel better about Hopkins in terms of like volume and those sorts of things. I think that's a justified position as well. So, I'll just say in terms of like targets, since the bye in week eight. So they've played five games since then. Christian Kirk, 8-6-6-6-3. So he's got 61 in the season. And yeah, it's about 30 of them or so in the since the bye there. Yeah, I think that's 29. 29 since the bye. And only nine when Fitzgerald was out, you know. So I you know, we'll see there in terms of drawing conclusions or anything like that. But it was a robust 20 for Hopkins in the two games that Fitzgerald was out. So not really much to write home about. Although I will say Dan Arnold, the past four games, has averaged three targets a game. So if you're thinking about, you know, if you're just destitute, dying on a vine type of thing, the numbers haven't been particularly robust in terms of like yardage, but he had the two touchdowns this past week. You know, he had the touchdown in actually in week 11, so he's probably not out there, but if he is, you know, that's a not necessarily a bad situation to, you know, just to try and get after here heading down the stretch. So all right, turning next to the Atlanta Falcons and you know, the Ito Smith show. I saw someone say, "Hey, who's your season winner down the stretch?" And someone posted Ito Smith, and I'll take 100-1. Like, that's you know, that's fine. I'm not going to bet against any, you know, any outlandish, outsized, seemingly implausible thing that have happened this year. Like, yeah, I can get in on that at 100-1. That's fine. But yeah, it just makes me giggle. Ito Smith is, goes, nine touches this past game. He actually, same touches as Gurley, notably 38 yards to 20 for Gurley there. So actually out touches, Brian Hill. So Brian Hill, past two games, has been out-touched by Ito Smith. That includes one without Gurley and one with. So I like the Brian Hill profile a little bit more. But in fairness, he hasn't been that productive this year. I think this offense is really broken in some ways, which it shouldn't be with a lot of the pieces that they have. But, you know, like the last time that Matt Ryan went over 300 yards was in week seven. That's pretty stunning, right, when you think about it. He was at a period was leading the league in passing. So that's a pretty steep steep drop-off there in terms of some of the numbers that we're seeing out of him and the pace that he was on. You know, he could break 5,000 yards any year, and it just hasn't really come about this year, especially down the stretch. Some of that's a little injuries, you know, Julio missing here and there and banged up, and, you know, Ridley in and out, and, you know, all these sorts of things. So looks like we're going to have a full slate of guys, you know, Gurley, the backup running back situation. I would say that I don't think Brian Hill is a firm hold. So if there's other options, you know, if you're out of the playoffs, he would be a guy that I would might move away from too. And, you know, like in shallower leagues, Gerald Everett was available for me, right? So I made an ad there. That's certainly one that I think you could sort of pivot to. And, you know, I think the, you know, I've talked about him quite a bit. I think there's going to be some robust opportunities for him. You know, maybe it's not huge, you know, like 3 years, $30 million, something like that. But I do think there's going to be a robust market for him in terms of suitors. So, like rostering him, for example, over Brian Hill, that could be a situation you know, shallower non-premium leagues. So that would be like a pivot play. But I don't think he's a firm hold. So, and I don't really think that much of Ito Smith. I think if anything were to happen, I think it's going to be a committee. And you saw the week where Gurley was out, there was, what, 29 touches, and they basically went halvesies on it. So, you know, so I don't know how good you're going to feel. Like, if you knew that sort of going in, you might say, okay, but I don't know how good you're going to feel in hindsight about that. So that would just sort of be the thought. Playing Julio, playing Ridley as well. Julio, DNP to start the week. So just be mindful of that. Football Guys has him likely to play. So feeling fine there in terms of that. You know, if he does a limited and goes, I think that's what he did last week too. So that would sort of be the arc that we're looking for. Hayden Hurst, limited with an ankle, but should be good to go as well. So, yeah, fire up the band. I think everyone should go here. You know, it's been Gurley as well, Ito Smith as well. They're both popped up as limiteds, but everyone looks like they're going to probably play. So, I would just note too that Atlanta has amongst some of the best matchups here down the stretch, according to difference, according to the defenses that they play, you know, compared to like an average team, the best quarterback schedule, the best, the second best wide receiver schedule, only behind Tampa Bay, and the best, second best tight end, only behind Green Bay. So, but I think you're playing your guys outside of probably running back. It's more has to do with, you know, the matchup's fine, but it more has to do with how good you feel about playing Gurley, for example. So that would sort of be my process on all of that. Okay, turning to the Carolina Panthers, and I'm in a matchup against Bridgewater this week in one that I really, really care about. So I'm hoping Denver pitches a shutout here. But Mike Davis, it looks like McCaffrey's not going to play. So he's played in three games this year, which is incredible. Mike Davis has been the leading snap getter in the games that that McCaffrey hasn't played. I would say, like, just as sort of a curious a cautionary thing, since week 10, which is basically the second stint of Mike Davis's tenure, 52%, 73%, 57% snap share. So you sort of look at that, you're like, it's not quite as good. That's 11, 21, and 18 touches. So you feel okay about that, right? That's actually not terrible. But, you know, I think you could play him. And I would be running back to range there for sure. In playing him, that would sort of be my process there with Mike Davis. So I think you can play him and feel fine about it in that sort of range. We do have a DJ Moore to COVID inactive. So it looks like he's actually COVID positive. So again, that's that Larry Fitzgerald issue, right? That we just talked about. He is probably in the scenario where you might not see him again, right? So that means it's Robbie Anderson. That means it's probably Curtis Samuel. Heck, maybe it's even Ian Thomas, I kid. Seems unlikely that it's actually going to be him. So, but yeah, I mean, that's a concern. The matchups aren't great down the stretch here. Running back's pretty neutral from here on out, and the passing game's a little bit of a knock. So that would be the thing that I would look for. We don't have any sample of DJ Moore not playing, so he might miss. You know, we'll have to see. Maybe it's week 14. It is week 14, so maybe it's a week 15. You know, it's like one of these short ones, non-symptomatic, those sorts of things. But if it's not, you know, we're looking week 16 with him coming back. I mean, the two games missed. I think if you took like a median, that would probably be it. That might be the most common one too. So that would be, you know, that would be sort of where I would look for, you know, him. I would expect him to miss week 14 and likely 15 because he did just test positive for it. Or he just went on the list early this week. So, you know, that would be the time frame. Curtis Samuel is on COVID reserve, a close contact. I would assume it's DJ Moore. I haven't read that specifically, but that would make the most sense. So he can be eligible to play. You know, he's got to go through the protocol and test negative and all those things, but he can be eligible to play. And again, how great you feel about playing a wide receiver who hasn't practiced. I don't know if anyone's actually done work, and I'm not sure how statistically significant it would be or anything like that. But looking at trends for guys who haven't practiced and sort of what they do, it'd be interesting to see. I haven't seen the work done on it, but it'd be interesting. And I'm not sure it would be, you know, we have a big enough sample to really say. But yeah, and then outside of that, Brandon Zylstra is really the only other guy getting work. Pharaoh Cooper's there down the line, but again, I don't think he's much involved. Yeah, that's pretty much where we're at. You know, so I think it's Robbie Anderson. I think if you feel okay about Samuel, you can play him more in a flex play. I think you play Mike Davis. You feel absolutely not inclined to play anyone in the tight end core. Ian Thomas's best line of the year, 3 for 28. His next best line, 2 for 16. So sort of gives you an idea of where we're at there. He does not... he has not had more than two targets since week 8. I'll say also, like, the passing numbers have come down for Mike Davis a bit. 5, 2, and 6 in the past three games there without McCaffrey. So one other thing too to note is some of that work has gone to Curtis Samuel. So if Curtis Samuel's not active, or if Curtis Samuel's not, you know, practicing, maybe that actually opens up some ceiling there for Mike Davis. So that would be the general assumption that I would have going into this week there. So, and that's Carolina. So going on to Chicago, my man David Montgomery, it gets some touchdown regression, and it's so funny because I'll be in on a player like. And I always think that this is a mistake. You'll get people who will say, you know, I'm just not interested in this player. And I always think that's a mistake. I'm not interested in this player at this cost is really the analysis that you should do. Because you should be open to any player at the right cost, right? Like you should be, if his price is significantly lower, right? If the second or the day two running back with a hit, right? If his cost is, you know, round 12, I'm not saying that it is, I'm just using this as a hypothetical, you should absolutely be in on that, right? He's a clear target player. But if his profile is a second round startup pick, like, that's a clear avoid, you know? So that would sort of be the thing. He's a classic example of that. So he gets on the right side of some touchdown regression, scores two touchdowns here, 21 touches total. And notably, Cordarrelle Patterson with 11. So I'll say this about Cordarrelle Patterson, like, it's a tough thing really, because in the against Green Bay they got doused really, and he only had two touches, but he had 11 this past week. So like, there's worse options that you could do, you know, if you're dealing with a you know, a COVID situation like a DJ Moore and you're looking for someone like Cordarrelle Patterson. Some of the guaranteed touches is
it's a little weird because you're getting, you're starting basically a running back in a wide receiver spot, but you're getting some of that guaranteed touches where you're not guaranteeing that against guys, you know, your fringe, your Darnell Mooney's, for example, to use a guy on the same team. You're not guaranteeing those touches, right? I don't necessarily think that Patterson is a guarantee, but I think he's sort of more likely to see 10 plus touches. And again, if they're carries, they're worth less, obviously, and all that stuff. But I just think you got to sort of play with that, look how that feels. But for example, this past week, 17 snaps, right? 17 snaps, 11 touches. So when you sort of look at that, you're like, all right, that's pretty interesting there. And he actually had two targets. So on 12 of his 17 snaps, he was the primary focus of that offense, ultimately. So, you know, you can, if he's going to see 20 to 30% of snaps, but be used on 60 to 70% of them, like, okay, we can get in on that. So that would sort of be my analysis there, but know that the floor can be pretty low too, because there have been some games where he hasn't seen any touches. So I think it's probably more of a game plan week. So just maybe watch for that in the news and sort of think about that. Would sort of be the lens that I would think about it. So so that's really the deal there. Yeah, Allen Robinson, I'll be interested to see where he ends up in free agency. Down in snaps, actually, this past week. So that'll just be a situation to watch for. It was a knee. He was limited the first 2 days, expected to play. So I think he should be good to go and feel confident with playing him here going forward. Yeah, I mean, and it's a good matchup too against Houston. So they're actually a home favorite. The total's not that high because, you know, that offense isn't that good. But, yeah, I think he can feel confident playing Allen Robinson for sure. So, and then Cole Clement's flashing. I wouldn't be in on any of the other receivers or anything like that. I think those guys, if, you know, Darnell Mooney's got like some hype men on Twitter. I haven't seen any women. I would be gender neutral for sure, but I haven't seen any women hyping him. It's been hype men, specifically. So we'll see on that if you own him or if he's available out there on the waiver wires. I doubt that he is, but if he is, and you want to just throw a stash again, sort of in the Brian Hill example that we used earlier, maybe he's like a flip guy in the off season. So I just look for that, and that narrative can actually open up because Robinson's going to be. Robinson may be gone. So that would be the analysis there. Cole Clement, notably, big time snaps over the past 3 weeks, 70, 79, 78. So that's a notable departure from earlier on in the season when he was really 30s and the 40s. He has trended up, right? So he started in the low 30s. There's a couple 20s in there. He bumped up to the 40s. Now it's like 70s. Like now it's full go. It's really the arc we like to see out of a round two tight end. Big investments in him in rookie drafts, just at clinically low prices. I mean, he's just a classic example of, like, you just collect profiles. And it wasn't particularly sexy. It was the tight end one in the class, and you just take him in third rounds of rookie drafts. You're like, yes, like, that is a successful process. So 13 targets in the past 3 weeks. He has 21 on the season. So more than half of that production has been there. Notable downtick from Jimmy Graham as well. 2, 4, and 1 the past 3 weeks. So if you're really thinking about it, like, I'm not saying I'm going to feel like over my skis on playing Cole Clement, but there's situations that it actually could be worse. And so he had a big breakout game here in week 13 against Detroit. I guess sometimes everyone can have a big breakout game against Detroit. It's not super. It's not super unlikely here. You know, they can be gotten. They have a neutral tight end schedule over the rest of the season. So, you probably want to see it again. But if you're absolutely dying on the vine or something like that, or a COVID issue pops up, like, he's seeing a lot of snaps. And has seen, like I said, 13 targets over the past 3 weeks. So you feel okay about his opportunity. So, and I saw him big catch this past week, and, you know, I was watching that game a bit, and for him specifically. And he jumped off the page at a couple spots. So excited for him there going forward. Because I think he's my most rostered tight end. It's either him or Evan Ingram. So they're going on different arcs at this point. All right, turning to Dallas. And Zeke's banged up a little bit, so that would be just a monitor situation that I would look for there. Limited, likely to play with a calf, but those things can be weird, right? That can get weird. So just be on the lookout for that. Obviously, if Zeke's out, you can play Tony Pollard. And I think you feel okay about that. I'll just say from like a Zeke perspective. Early on in the season, when it was the Dak offense, no less than 82% of snaps to the first 5 weeks, and that was basically the Dak era. Since then, he hasn't cracked 80%. So I don't know if that's strategic. I don't know if that's game script. I'm not sure if they're making a, hey, let's, you know, we're going to kind of cash this season in. Let's save our huge investment in a running back, right? You can sort of take some mileage off the tires intentionally. I'm not sure if that's the scenario or whatnot, but you're seeing a gradual uptick for Tony Pollard, right? In the 30s, really, like early on in the early non-Dak tenure, right? So that was the Andy Dalton, Ben DiNucci, Garrett Gilbert phase. But 36-39% the last 2 weeks, that corresponds to two of the lowest snap shares for Zeke over the course of the season as well. So just be on the monitor for that. In the receiver position, again, it is Gallup, Cooper, Lamb. Nothing has changed. And so I think the big-time investment of people in Lamb, like, I get it. But at the same time, I think you have to say, well, what's going on here, right? And if you sort of – and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's something more with Zeke. Maybe they're not making a strategic decision with Zeke. But if they are and that's your premise, it's – why wouldn't they do the same thing with Gallup versus Lamb, right? Why wouldn't they – say, hey, we need to sort of grow Lamb. Is there a cap there, right? Is there something more there? And we talk about this with the uncertainty factor. There's a lot that we don't know about these guys. So we see it on game day, but we don't really know. And that would be just a concerning thing that I would say. In some of these situations too, like we can say, Lamar Miller is the classic example. They should use Lamar Miller more. That was the Miami narrative. And then, lo and behold, he gets the bigger job. And then it's like, oh, now we see why. Right? Like, now we see, like, he really wasn't, like, this huge, hyper-efficient, 18-touch guy, right? That wasn't who he was. And maybe Miami knew that, right? That's why they didn't, right? They had more information. I would just say, like, if you're going to make a huge investment in CeeDee Lamb, like, you got to – I think your eyes need to be open to this. And you have to just think critically about that decision. So the flip side of it that I would say is, like, he might be a scenario where we've talked in prior years about guys like Baker, right? And Kyler Murray, for example, like, is a pretty good example of this last year. Like, if you're going to make the huge investment in him, like, okay, but – what's the risk in basically waiting another year, right? So you don't spend a top, with Murray, it was like you don't spend a top 10 startup pick in him. Like you can wait. And the thing, when you wait on a player like that who has this limited sample, like even if you're wrong, like even if you should have been in, like it turns out right, like the numbers would say that's probably an unlikely thing to happen. But if it does, right, if you roll the wrong percentage and he turns out to be good, well, that's great. Like, now you know, right? And then you can spend the top, six or whatever startup pick on him. He really hasn't gotten more expensive, right? It hasn't, you feel much better about it. that's really the case with that I would say with like Lamb, right? If you say, hey, like I could really see myself spending it on him, like do you need to do it this offseason? That would just be the thought that I would have. And so that would just be the concern piece that I would have about the snap stuff. And again, if Gallup's going to be back, same coaching staff, like you're going to feel all that goodness about it. Like is your opinion really going to change? Cause that would be my concern with it. So, Dalton Schultz, 90% snaps, like he's playing a ton of snaps there. I'm not sure I feel good about Gallup near lineups. I think Lamb seeing more targets, certainly per snap and all those things. But Gallup the past couple weeks, like, Gallup's the third most targeted player on their team. But I'll just say in the past couple of weeks, 5, 8, and 11. So, that's a solid, robust 24 targets. That's the same that Cooper has had during that time span. And it's actually a couple of more than CeeDee Lamb has had during that time span. So I would just say, like, if you're thinking that Lamb's going to do it on smaller sample, just be cautious of that, because again, it's really not a foregone conclusion on that for me. So that would just sort of be the caution that I would have there with Dallas. All right, turning to Detroit, and I think the notable thing here was Adrian Peterson saying, "Hey, football's fun again." That's never good when your boss gets fired and everyone's like, "Oh, it's so much better now." It's like, "Oh boy." So that's really the big thing there. We're waiting for Swift to come back. Concussion, then illness, so he misses both of those two games, and now limited here. So it seems odd that it's a limited situation if it's an illness. It just seems weird. So I would just be cautious, like on that sort of on that COVID spectrum. Like, is it a stomach bug? Like, is there something going on? And is it sort of sapping him of energy? Why is he still limited? Right. And I would just be, I'm probably going to play him. Right. I think he deserves probably to be in your lineup, but I would just like, if you are breaking ties, it's going to be tough. Realistically, it's going to be tough to break ties against him because he's really good, right? And you're probably going to be a top, 16 projection when he plays, something like that. If you've got another option that's close and that's healthy, and that would maybe be a situation where I would sit Swift down. Again, we're not all graced with that luck, right? But, or that fortune, right? But that would just sort of be an analysis that I would think about when you're setting your lineups here. So, so that's certainly one there. And, and then outside of that, Marvin Jones has been good. Galladay is likely inactive again. Marvin Jones has been good. And we like to see that. I think Amendola, he's clear of the injury stuff. So that's good. He's back. But you're going to be without Galladay. So with Amendola in his first game back, 49% of snaps, 46% for Quentin Cephas, 59% for Mohamed Sanu. So Sanu is the wide receiver two in terms of snaps. Marvin Jones, a robust 94%. So you feel pretty good about that number there. In terms of targets, it's 12 over the past two games for Marvin Jones. So that's pretty good in terms of, feeling good about him being in lineups and maybe being a beneficiary of no Galladay. Especially that first game, it was basically the him and Hockenson show because essentially everyone was out. And so there was a plenty of ceiling opportunity, and we saw that from both of them. So now we get Amendola back, right? Do we get Swift back? Does that sort of cap some of that ceiling? Maybe, right? But those are two of the better games that we've seen in terms of usage for Marvin Jones for sure. I'll just say, like, looking down Hockenson's targets the past since week 8 there, so the past 6 games, 10, 8, 4, 7, 8, 9. So feel really good about him really taking a step. I've seen him ranked as high as tight end 2. I'm going to have to rethink this a little bit because You know, I think he really fits up there in the top four, I'll say, like the top five. I got to really think about Darren Waller in terms of age and profile, because he's up there older, and really think about where he fits in, especially going forward. If we're sort of talking in like how comfort we feel like long term range, like Hockenson's going to be really be up there, but maybe Waller has more, you know, ceiling in a season. But again, how much are you trading off of, like, all right, so it's maybe like 0.2 of a win, right? How much you really feel comfortable trading that off of, when, you know, I'm not sure how great you're going to feel about Waller, like in 18 months, for example, just where he is age wise and all that stuff. So that would really be the balance there. But I think Hockenson and like Mark Andrews are really interesting. I think I'd put Kittle and Kelsey above him, and then sort of start at three with Hockenson and Andrews being guys. I want to do some more work on some of the routes and all that stuff too. I specifically those two guys, but I think they absolutely deserve to be top four, top five guys for sure. So that's really the feeling there. And I saw Swift first round of startup ADP. So we'll see here with some of the slowing down stuff with some of the injuries and the concussion, the illness, right? All that stuff. Like, we'll just watch for what that does, because that, you know, a slow end to the season. Not that I'm necessarily projecting that, but if that's what happens, that can really shift his value. So that would just be a thing that I would look for going forward. All right, turning to Green Bay. Devontae Adams is very good. That's no news there. Aaron Rodgers to Devontae Adams. I think I talked about this in the AFC version. It's as good as you'll find, I think, really. Aaron Jones, huge game against Philly. 18 touches, $148 and a touch. So you'll take that. 7 touches for Jamal Williams. He's been since so Jamal Williams missed in week 9. It's tough because these guys were like in and out of the lineup, and it was sort of disorienting there for a little bit. But Jones missed some time, and then Jamal Williams missed the next game where Jones was actually back. So since they've both been back, which has been week 10, it's been 11 touches for Jamal Williams, 6, 17, and 7. So I'll just say, like, there's 2 touchdowns in there. So you feel good about those. You know, you feel good about those games, but, you know, that's kind of a high variance outcome. And how good do you feel about that in the playoffs really is a question that I would have. Like, it feels tough. And I have him in like a situation where I'm just kind of, shouldn't have made the playoffs, honestly. Like, it I sort of broke everything broke right for me, and he's one of those guys that's sort of on that cusp of like the running back 2 is pretty destitute for me. So he's a guy I'm gonna have to think about. Again, it's at Detroit, so maybe you feel good about this, about the situation. Say, hey, they can get up and maybe it's a him game. I'll just say over the course of the next season, like, they have over the rest of the season, they have a pretty favorable matchup in terms of above average matchups across the board at all the positions. Quarterback's the second best. Running back is, you know, about middle of the road or so. It's slightly above average. Top 10, I guess, or so there in terms of that. And then wide receiver, also like top 8 would be it there. And then at tight end, the best. So Robert Tonyan, like, he's going to see some positive matchups in terms of the strength of schedule against the tight end position. So, I think in terms of it's not particularly sexy, but I think in terms of you have the formula is actually not super difficult to see a situation like this progress. Guy without a huge wide receiver 2 with a good quarterback. And that's kind of where he is, and he's competent, right? That's kind of the calculus on how you can see these guys have upticks. So Tonyan scored in 3 straight games, and a lot of it's touchdowns, right? If he doesn't score, it's probably not going to be it's not going to be that big of a game, but that's pretty much the tight end position. So you sort of attach yourself to a good quarterback, and he's up to, what, 8 touchdowns on the season, something like that. So That's kind of how I would I'd be feeling it. He's got 5 targets the past 3 games. So in terms of the receiving stats, it is Jamal Williams with 4 targets and Aaron Jones with 9 over the past 3 games there. So Davante Adams, no surprise, hasn't seen less than 8 targets since he's been back, and that was week 6. So all but 2 of those have been double digits. So yeah, huge volume, and you just love to see that with good matchups here. It could be an explosive end of the season there for those two. The Rams are playing right now. It's in the midst of a Cam Akers breakout game as I'm recording this, so excited for that. I didn't feel confident about getting him in lineups this week. It didn't feel like he was in sort of the conversation in a couple of spots. I started him in a spot where I just needed him, but I didn't feel confident. But in week 14, in week 15, I will. So that would be the probably, we'll look at the snap numbers and all that. It has felt like a huge snap game for him. Haven't followed it, haven't counted or anything like that, but it's felt like a huge snap game. 63% week 13, for him there. So, things could be trending really right. And what's interesting is all right, if he closes this deal pretty quickly, that's really going to shape ADP. It's going to be a big deal in terms of ADP. He could be a second round startup guy. And that might sound insane considering a month ago he was playing 4% of snaps, but there's just a gap there in some of those guys that it really is. There's a level of uncertainty in around 10 or so is what I would project and be in some of the startup stuff. So yeah, definitely gonna be watching him. If he's gonna close this deal, he could be running back 2, maybe running back 3 in this class, something like that in startup drafts. We'll see. I think it's gonna be hard for him to get above Clyde Edwards-Helaire and hard to get above Swift, but you could see him slot in above Taylor, depending on how they finish, and Dobbins as well. So that'll be interesting to watch for a guy that was basically running back 5 for most of the off season there, or most of the rookie draft season, and most of the season actually. So, so we'll do a full cover of the Rams next week. So turning to Minnesota, we get Thielen back after some of the COVID stuff, so that's good. Him and Justin Jefferson, 90%+ of snaps. It was 99% for Justin Jefferson with Thielen out. So this continues to be one of those ones where I could see, I think Thielen is still fine in terms of a productive guy, but I wonder if they have to make some salary cap adjustments, we'll say, if he's not expendable, with what they have in Justin Jefferson. And, and I'll just say all right, Thielen's been good, but you sort of look at some of the stat lines and it's 3 for 27, 2 for 38, 4 for 43 and 2. Okay. That's good. 8 for 123 and 2. So that's massive. And then he misses the game with COVID, 8 for 75 and 1. So from a fantasy perspective, the last 3 games he's smashed. But in terms of some of the usage stuff, he's getting a high percentage of the work, but it's only 84 targets on the season, right? And I think a lot of that is, 87 targets on the season. So a lot of that is just they don't throw the ball a ton. I like Kirk Cousins, but there is a certain cap to the season when you just don't have a huge amount of passing volume. So that would just be and if they're going to try and continue to be this way, right? If this is going to be how they continue to try and win, it puts a level of, I just think there's questions about, do you want to continue to pay Thielen all this money and take hits at other spots when that's not really a focal point of your offense, and you've got an ascendant star on the opposite side. So I maybe it's not probable, but I think it's possible that they at least adjust him down, or he's a casualty in the offseason. So but Kirk Cousins at quarterback 12 on the season And again, it's not like when you look at the guys in the top, in the top 12, the only guy with less attempts than him is Lamar Jackson. Ryan Tannehill slightly more, but everyone else is 40 plus attempts more than him. So then when you add in some of the rushing stuff too, like, there's like a lot guys are seeing a lot more of that are above him that are even close to him in terms of passing stuff. So, or in terms of the passing attempts. So it's you know, I'll give Cousins you know, this was a, I saw it posted on Twitter and it made me laugh because it was like, oh, you know, who could have saw Aaron Rodgers come in? I was like, we did. And it was like, oh, no one would have thought that Kirk Cousins would have posted a top 12 season. Like, yep, we did. Yeah, we were kind of on that. We were on Stafford too, as quarterback 16, right? You know, maybe he closes and it gets close, and you know, like those things are all possible. But yeah, like it wasn't that hard to project because you just take profiles and you just take them, right? And you sort of take the name away and just look at the profile, and it's not like it's we make it way too complicated sometimes, and Kirk Cousins is a good example of that. Madison is dealing with appendectomy. Haven't seen specifically what the nature of the surgery was. It looked like it was one of those laparoscopic ones, in terms of like it's a little bit more, a little bit less invasive, I guess, in terms of like they're not fully cutting you open. I haven't seen the specifics on it. That was kind of how it was written. And they're still, you know, reporting, hey, you know, he didn't practice today. It's not like they've actually ruled him out. It was a successful appendectomy. So that's good there, you know, fortunate that it wasn't worse. And I can't imagine like if he was like sick and hey, I'll play through it, and it was actually like a rupturing appendectomy, I can't imagine that'd be good for your health. So yeah, it was a good catch, and we're glad he's healthy and all that. So good to see there. I don't think there's anyone really worth rostering as a backup right now, because I think he's going to be back in any event, you know. But again, that's kind of that Larry Fitzgerald situation. How are we going to feel exactly on playing him in the event Cook goes down? That's tomorrow Jordan, or tomorrow your problem. That's future Jordan or future you problem. And it's more of a hypothetical, because if it's a injury of Dalvin Cook getting hurt, right, that's really where the that would come into play. So it would sort of be my thought on all of that. Minnesota does notably have the worst running back schedule to close the season, and it's not close. So that would just be a thing that I would say there in terms of that. So even though if Madison were to get a start, it's probably going to be a lot of volume, but it's probably not going to be super high ceiling. So that would sort of be the analysis there. And then the tight end position, Irv Smith has been out a couple of games, you know, and it's Kyle Rudolph, but that's not particularly attractive. Yeah, and it looks like it's a back for Irv Smith. So he was actually limited on Thursday. I don't really think it's lineup viable at all. He's going to be kind of like in that Ian Thomas, oh, can he break out kind of late track, and he hasn't shown much to suggest it's actually going to happen. Okay, New Orleans Saints, and we love us some Alvin Kamara, back on the right side of the Taysom Hill experience. 17 touches, goes for 97 yards and a touchdown. So it's not the best Alvin Kamara game, but at least it's good, right? Instead of a couple of the other games, like he did have a touchdown in that Atlanta game, but it was like no receptions. Like he's had 3 receptions since Taysom Hill's been here playing, and that's actually less than Latavius Murray. So that's a notable double check of the stat line to make sure everything's typed in right, but it is. And so, you know, there's been, since Breeze has been out, 5 red zone opportunities for, Alvin Kamara, 8 for Latavius Murray. So that sort of boils into it. So, you know, you look at some of the scoring numbers are down. Latavius Murray, was out snapping him over those first 2 games. He had a snap more per game there, a snap more over those 2 games total ahead of Kamara. But this one reverts back to a little bit more normal, 62% for Kamara, 41% for Latavius Murray. So I think that's probably like a floor for Murray, though. You could say, all right, like he hasn't had worse than 41% of snaps since week 9. So I think if you're sort of looking at this, and that predates Breeze too, predates Breeze's injury. So I do think if you're looking at a situation saying, hey, I need to play someone, sort of in that hypothetical situation I talked about where I have the some problems there at the backup running back or at the running back spot, like he's one of the answers there. And again, it's been 12, 9, 14, 20, and 7 touches. So you feel good for like a floor of 7 to maybe like 12, and then you get like an outlier of that 20 touches. It is Philly here, so you know, you could see a scenario where things go like I think there's asymmetric upside for sure, because things could go really bad in this experience. They have the best running back scheduled down the stretch here, and it's by 3 games over the next best, which is actually Chicago. So yeah, I mean, I think you roll them, you feel confident about them here down the stretch. You feel confident about Kamara, and I think you can get Murray in lineups if you need to on that running back 2 flex spectrum. That would sort of be where it is. You know, you're hoping it's running back 4 really on the you know, ranking your starters there, that he's like your 4th running back that's been started. But if it's a desperation play and he's running back 2 or running back 3, like I think it's there's worse options for sure. And then, yeah, Michael Thomas, he's back. He hasn't played a ton of snaps, though. So that would be the notable curiosity in this whole thing. So since Breeze has been out, it's been 86, 67, and then 60% of snaps there for Thomas. And he was hurt. It's banged up here with the ankle still. Limited in practice. Expected to play and all that. But you just wonder if it's still cutting into some of his upside. Ultimately, in terms of numbers, you can't really sneeze at it. 12, 6, and 11 targets the past 3 weeks. So I've actually like done a little work on it, and I don't think that the lack of Breeze actually hurts Michael Thomas. There's a statistical case. I wouldn't maybe shout this from like the middle of the street with a bullhorn or anything, because people are going to think you're crazy, but that, hey, maybe Breeze isn't like all that helpful to him, right? Like maybe there's other guys that can actually unlock some different things. I think that's a possible range of outcome for Michael Thomas. So if he's going to be a faller, which he is in startup valuations, like we're probably going to be banging on him in startup drafts. Jared Cook had a good game this past week. It's been pretty low volume would be the analysis here with Taysom Hill, 8 targets over the past 3 games. So it's kind of disappointing there, but scores a touchdown in this past game, 3 for 28 and 1. So that's really what you're going to need, is that touchdown from him in the event that Breeze is out. It has a much lower ceiling with Taysom Hill at quarterback. All right. Turning to the New York Giants, and if you had the Giants in like a pool of, hey, give me a running back give me a team that's going to really have like a running back that really down the stretch is going to just really be, you know, scoring a lot of points and have a good high floor, and, you know, really being in lineups, you feel confident about him going down the stretch, the Giants probably would have ranked really high because it would have been Saquon Barkley. Well, it's actually Wayne Gallman. And since week 7, Wayne Gallman has either scored a touchdown or run over 100 yards. So you're like, all right, like this is what we're doing. And just in terms of some of the touch stuff, like it's not even smoke and mirrors. 15, 13, 15, 19, 27, 16, right? So it's been a locked in 12 to 19 is really the range, and the 27 is obviously an outlier there, but it has been volume, right? And so it hasn't been Deion Lewis, it hasn't really been Alfred Morris saw 7 touches this past week, or excuse me, 9 touches this past week, but it has been the Gallman show. So It's one of the more unique, one of the more, I'm not even going to say it's necessarily unlikely. I think that it's a backup for the Giants, that it was Wayne Gallman is actually pretty unlikely. You know, it was, he's basically had to dodge all these bullets. He had to dodge Barkley, so Barkley gets hurt in week two, and then it's the Deion Lewis show. And then they signed Devonta Freeman, and you're like, all right, well, then Devonta Freeman and comes in week three, and they all play about a third of snaps, you know, roughly there, but he's out-snapped by Deion Lewis for sure, and I felt that was like a Deion Lewis week. And then Devonta Freeman plays north of 50% for the next 3 weeks. And, you know, Deion Lewis is still out playing Gallman. And then Freeman gets hurt. And you're like, all right, well, what's going to happen now? And then it has been ever since then a growing, really a growing share for Devonta Freeman. So a growing share for Wayne Gallman and really putting Deion Lewis really to a back burner. So when you sort of add it up, Wayne Gallman, whether it's, you know, availability is the best ability, or the fact that he's really coming on, leads them in snaps, which isn't something that you would have thought would have really been the case really at any point up through like week six. So things change quickly, and this is one of these situations. And I was actually on a podcast earlier this week. Someone was talking about, yeah, there are all these unexpected situations. And I was like, in the aggregate, like the individual one might be unexpected, but in the aggregate, like, no, like this is like well within the range of what we should expect. And that's sort of what our strategy should be. You're trying to capture these and realizing that a lot of it's random. But Gallman's a good example of that. At the receiver position, it's been Darius Slayton's really leading them in snaps. Sterling Shepard had a downtick here in the past in this past week. So did Golden Tate. You know, we're getting some signs, I guess, from Ingram. So there was some hand wringing going on earlier in the season, but since week seven, right? Like you just. There was hand-wringing some of the, in the primacy recency stuff too of these scenarios can absolutely happen where things that happen earlier anchor in our brain. And then, you know, when we look back, the things that happen late anchor in our brain too. But we're sort of in the middle right now. And that was a big like strategy point. Always the first thing he said in like an opening statement and the last thing he said in a closing was really the two things that really anchored with people. And so you sort of shaped a strategy around that. Well, it was kind of a slow start for Ingram in terms of the productivity stuff and was kind of a disappointment and all that stuff. How about these targets over the past six games? 9, 10, 10, 3. And then there's a bye in week 11. 9 and 8. Like you feel really good. That's like wide receiver one type targets out of a tight end. So you feel good about it in terms of a volume. You know, is it the most lucrative volume stuff? No, probably not. But again, the floor is pretty good. So since week seven, 6 for 46, 5 for 61, 5 for 48 and a touchdown, 2 for 5, 6 for 129 and 4 for 32. So, you know, it's not super high end, but it is pretty, it's pretty lucrative in terms of the targets there. So he's tight end 11 on only one touchdown. To give you an idea, no one else in the top 14 has any less than 3 touchdowns. And then once you really get beyond that, then you got a couple guys with like 2. But he's really doing it on volume and a lack of touchdown production. If you gave him, you know, if you just gave him a couple more touchdowns, right, even with all the hand wringing, if you just said instead of 1, it's 3. All of a sudden, instead of being tight end 11, he's tight end 5. And then you're like, oh, all right, like that feels good. And when you sort of look at the numbers, he's really not that much different than a guy like Eric Ebron. They look very close in terms of their numbers. They're within a catch of each other, like 30 yards of each other. But it's 4 more touchdowns for Ebron, right? That's really the deal. So I would say, you know, maybe it's some of it's the offense or whatnot, but I think you can feel decent about Ingram and just say, hey, like if things break right, you're going to get you'll get some better performances there. So that would really be the analysis that I would do. But I feel okay about him going forward. Again, I think maybe Hockenson has a little bit more ceiling and stuff like that. But I when you sort of break these guys down, it's tough to take Ingram out of the top, like eight of tight ends, even though people want to say those things. So, all right, Philadelphia and Jalen Hurts is going to get a start. So we'll look to see what that is. The hand wringing about Miles Sanders has been pretty remarkable. Hasn't had a touchdown since week five. Had a 100-yard game in week six, then missed week seven and eight. Then he went 95 total yards on 17 touches in week 10, 18 touches and 81 yards in week 11. And then, here's some of the recency stuff. Eight touches for 22 yards in week 12. That's like absolutely inexcusable from a coaching perspective. That's just absolutely inexcusable. And then, it's 10 for 31 against Green Bay, and they bring in Jordan Howard, and Jordan Howard goes 4 for 19. So again, like the fact that he isn't a like 45 catch guy in this offense is pretty quizzical to me. I fail to understand it. So, the coaches know more, I guess, but I don't know. The receiver position, Greg Ward has a big game, but again, he's like one of the least efficient wide receivers. Like, you can just add by subtraction, and it would be playing Fulgham more or, Rager more or whatever, but they, it's 71%, and that's the best for him in the past four games. So again, the efficiency stuff's weird. And again, Fulgham was like this super high efficiency guy, like historic efficiency for a stretch there. And now he's playing 40% of snaps. That's inexcusable. Jalen Rager, 71% of snaps. That's inexcusable. John Hightower, 29% of snaps. Like, Alshon Jeffrey, 56% of snaps. Like, get the guys that are good playing. And I don't know. I fail to see what they're doing that makes a ton of sense, honestly. I guess that's really the analysis. Alshon Jeffrey popped up on injury report with limited on Wednesday, but should be good to go. I don't know what this offense is going to look like in 2021, but I'm buckled up and ready to watch. Zach Ertz is back. Dallas Goedert, 84% to 44% to Zach Ertz. Ertz 2 for 31, and then Goddard was 5 for 66. So I think that really speaks to, this should be the Goddard show going forward, and they can get out of Ertz's contract, and it not be horrible for them. Despite, they stack up some of these contracts, and they end up being pretty horrible. So Ertz did get four targets, seven for Goddard, 6, 6, 10, and 7 for Goddard. So pretty good floor there for him over the past four games. We'll see how Ertz impacts that. It honestly shouldn't be much, because like, they should put Ertz on the field, or they should keep Goddard on the field in lieu of like any of those jabronis at wide receiver. So, but that's probably not what they'll do. All right. Turning to Seattle and, some of the Russell Wilson stuff is pretty interesting in terms of him coming back to earth a little bit. And it was funny, because in a podcast last year, someone asked me like, well, how much can you really trust Russell Wilson? Cause he closes so bad. Like, he won me a championship in his spot. Like, I had him and Doug Baldwin stacked in week 16 and was down by like an enormous amount. And like, Baldwin went like 8 for like broke the century mark and 2 touchdowns, and Russell Wilson went for like 350 and 3, and it was like, I closed just an enormous deficit down with those two guys, and the last touchdown won it. So that I never really bought that narrative. But we'll see here down the stretch. He started well early, and it sort of cooled off a bit. And now, we'll sort of watch here, which is interesting, because he had a above average, matchup situation. We'll watch for that and see here down the stretch. He has a good matchup schedule here. Top six in terms of fantasy scoring there. Wide receivers are pretty good too, up in the top five there as well. And the running backs are just below average, but I'm not sure how great you're going to. I think you're feeling good about about the receivers. DK Metcalf is actually taken over pretty big in terms of the dynasty marketplace. You know, I think he's at wide receiver one in some spots. You know, I get the reason why. I certainly get the reason why. Lockett, I still think, is probably underrated. He's had a couple of down games, actually, in the past, like, call it 6 weeks. But, you know, has some uptick games. He's due for, like, just an absolute, like, blow-up spot. Kind of like, it's too bad that Greg Williams still isn't the defensive coordinator for the Jets, because, like, they could put him on single, you know, the blitz, like, nine guys and have single coverage on the outside against, like, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. And just, like, you know, Russell Wilson goes for, like, you know, 503 and six, like that'd be just a really awesome outcome. But, you know, probably not going to get that. Hopefully, you know, maybe the new defensive coordinators learned that lesson. But yeah, it just feels like a revenge tour. Like they lost to the Giants last week. Like, all right, they take care of business here against the Jets. And, you know, they have like not a great matchup here down the stretch. Like Washington's better than I think people expect. So, yeah, that's this whole scenario there. Chris Carson, 58% of snaps. That's his, it's really his best since week five. It's actually his best since week three. He played a couple games there in the mid 50s. So 58% is actually pretty good for him. It's his second best snap percentage of the season. So, again, there, he missed, a decent stretch there and was hurt and coming back from injury. So you don't really count it, but even like at the beginning of the season, like that four game stretch really where he was healthy after week one, this was like ranks up there, right in line with that workload. So feel decent about that. You know, he scores a touchdown, 16 touches compared to five for Hyde. So I think that's really where what you're feeling going forward in terms of all of it. That's really be the situation there. I think Carson's your guy. Limited expected to play. Hyde also limited expected to play over at Football Guys for their projections. So just of note, the tight end position now with Olsen out, 54% for Will Dissly, 54% for Jacob Hollister. So they split there. Dissly had that weird game where he played a ton of snaps and didn't run a route. So that really regressed back towards its mean, 4 for 28 here against the Giants, and 3 for 20 for Hollister. So I don't think you feel really good about either of them being the clear guy here going forward. Tampa Bay, they're off a bye here. So let's see if they get some stuff right. Like there's a lot of hand wringing, some of that stuff. I don't know. I think the all timer will get it right. Would be my thought process. I'll say, like, in terms of some of the game script stuff, when you look at, you know, when you look over the course of the season, Leonard Fournette, the past two games has outsnapped Ronald Jones, but that doesn't really correspond to the touches. So over the past 2 weeks, Leonard Fournette has been on the field more than half the time, 52% and 56%. During that time, 8 touches and 6 touches, compared to Ronald Jones, 36% those past 2 weeks, 10 and 10. Ronald Jones is actually really high in terms of rushing yards for the season. Again, a lot of that's concentrated in like three games. That 192 will really help you. So he's really concentrated in a couple of those games. I don't think you feel great about starting either guy. But if there's going to be a blow up guy, I think it's going to be Jones, right? That would sort of be my take there. I have them on the same team, in a couple of spots, I think actually. And if I was going to play one, I think it'd be Ronald Jones over Fournette. So that'd be my process there. The receiver position, it's basically Antonio Brown slotting into, it's pretty variant, but I would say between half and three quarters of the snaps, you feel confident saying that's where it's going to be. Mike Evans, 90% of snaps, 92% for Chris Godwin. So it's really a Godwin, Evans, Brown show here. And that's pretty consistent going back to since Brown's been there, that has pretty much been the ordering of things every week. Yeah, it has been. So then you're seeing like the most you're getting out of anyone else is like Scotty Miller with like, you know, I don't know, maybe 20%, something like that. You'd feel confident in projecting. Yeah, and that kind of corresponds to the targets, right? Like 9 targets this past week for Godwin, 9 for Evans. It's 3 for Antonio Brown. Again, I talked about this last week. It's been, in terms of Mike Evans, like 29 targets over the past 3 weeks. Like that's the highest out of the, on the team. So you feel like, all right, Antonio Brown hasn't really taken the top off of any of those guys. So it's really consolidating the wide receiver 3 into a better one. And it's consolidating like 3 or 4 guys who were playing, you know, some like the equivalent of like a wide receiver 3 type snaps. And really consolidating into one guy, Antonio Brown. So I think that's really the story. Gronk, yeah, I mean, basically 3/4 of snaps. And, you know, I wouldn't say there's really a clear trend in his stats. I mean, maybe they've come up a little bit from the slow start. But, you know, it's 4, 6, 3, 6, 7 in terms of targets over the past 5 weeks. So not great, but... Cameron Brate actually 3, 4, and 6. So, you know, if they're you're looking for like a 2 tight end special, something like that, I'm sure he's out there, but I think you can probably feel okay in playing him that he's going to see some snaps, you know, basically like 35 to like 45% of snaps is really his range, and see, you know, 3, 4, 5 targets, something like that would be the thought. I did talk a lot about Washington in the other show just because, like Pittsburgh turned into me talking about everyone but Pittsburgh, but Alex Smith, love the dude. Antonio Gibson's going to be out, it looks like. So Peyton Barber, maybe the play. I'm not sure you feel great about it. I mean, this isn't really set up like a great scenario. You're going at San Francisco, home versus Seattle, and then home versus Carolina. So maybe that week 16 game you feel better in. You know, that week 15 game, it doesn't feel like it's even going to be that like good of a like game script or anything like that. So that would sort of be the cautionary thing. They're below, like well below average in terms of their running back strength of schedule here, bottom 5. So even if like it's Peyton Barber for the rest of the season, it doesn't really feel all that great. And I think JD McKissick's pretty much locked into his role. You're starting McLaurin, and I love me some Alex Smith, and that's pretty much the story there. Logan Thomas is a huge game. They have a notably terrible schedule down the stretch. This is a murderer's row for them, so we'll see what they have. It'd be really interesting to watch, but I am rooting for them out of the NFC, absolutely, for sure. They're my NFC team this year. All right, well, that'll do it. You know, kick some butt in week 14. Excited to hear stories and excited to, you know, cash some championship checks with you guys and really, you know, I'm really getting into some of the writing here for Analytics of Dynasty 3.0. Like, it's really coming together. I've got a couple chapters submitted. I got some good stuff in store in terms of some contributors too. I'm really excited about all that. So, yeah, have that to look forward to, and I'm sort of reading over those and getting those prepped, and it's really going to be a big like 6 to 8 weeks here for me, really getting stuff out the door and prepped and ready to go, and all the media stuff that goes along with it. So really, really excited for all that stretch. So, you know, hope you're sticking along here. Hope to have some stuff announced too in terms of how Patreon might work going forward. Sort of trying to sort some things out, like when this whole story ends, like maybe I don't know, like over the next few months, like there's some funny backstory that'll be able to tell in terms of some of it. So but I can't really get into a ton of it right now, but hopefully I will be able to more in detail going forward. So all right, well, that'll do it for this episode. Kick butt in week 14. Till next time, continue embracing the variance, and we will talk again very soon.